You're listening to PX Space, a patient experience podcast devoted to the human side of healthcare, brought to you by MDM Healthcare, committed to excellence in healthcare, offering a wide range of technology products, with your host, Linda Robinson, the Vice President of Clinical Excellence.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of PX Space. I'm Linda Robinson, your host. Today, we are thrilled to discuss a heartwarming topic involving our furry companions in healthcare. That's right, animal-assisted services. What was once known as pet therapy has evolved into a department that contributes daily to a holistic approach to healthcare. Whitney Romine, our guest today, is going to share with us the importance of the human-animal bond and its positive impacts. Welcome, Whitney.
Thank you, Linda.
Whitney is the Animal Assisted Services Coordinator at Mayo Clinic Rochester. She is a certified Animal Assisted Intervention Specialist and holds a Canine Assisted Intervention Specialist certificate from the University of Denver Institute for Human-Animal Connection. Her background is in healthcare volunteer coordination, animal assisted services program administration, and public health with a focus on One Health. As an animal welfare advocate, she centers animal choice, consent, positive reinforcement, and animal handler empowerment in her practice. Whitney is a subject matter expert and a member of the Association of Animal Assisted Interventions Professionals, and a member of the American Psychological Association Human-Animal Interaction Division. Wow, that is a mouthful, Whitney.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. Thank you, Linda. I'm glad to be here.
That is wonderful. I am so excited to have you here. And, you know, my first thing, I think we all love animals, but you have just taken it so much further. And I have to tell everyone on the phone, everyone I talk to at Mayo tells me I have to meet Whitney and I must talk to Whitney. So here we are. We got Whitney. So share with us, you know, your passion. What inspired you to engage in animal assisted services? Was it a lifelong dream or did something drive you to get involved?
That's a great question, and it has a complicated answer, but essentially there were a series of crisscrossing events that kind of led me down this path. So it all started back in college. I was participating in a group called Kent State United for Biloxi. It was right after Hurricane Katrina, and we went down to Mississippi and the Gulf Coast area, and we did a lot of restoration work, and I found that to be one of the best experiences of my life. And I remember coming home after that volunteering and thinking, you know, I really wish I could have amazing volunteer experiences like this, but with a dog. Right. And so then I really started to look for what could that look like. And at the time, I had to focus on my studies and I didn't really have too much time for volunteering. And then when I graduated, my first post-graduation job was as a hospital volunteer coordinator. And I didn't even know that volunteer coordination was a profession that you could get a job in or you could work in. And it was kind of a serendipitous moment that I even discovered the field, but it was a perfect fit for me because I just absolutely love what hospital volunteers do. I love how important they are to making sure that patients have a really good experience. But I don't think I really appreciated how important they are until later on in my career as I really started to hear the stories of the volunteers and seeing the impact that they have on patients and all of these amazing transformative stories. So in my first role, I was part of my caseload, and in addition to several other volunteer programs that I provided support for, was the Animal Assisted Support Program. And we had volunteers that provided visits to patients with their dogs, similar to what most people are familiar with. And so as part of that role, when I was learning how to run programs like that, I was asked to coordinate a pet partner's evaluation inside the hospital. So I had to book the room and I had to recruit volunteers to be testing assistants and I had to book the pet partner's evaluator and make sure they had everything they need. So I actually got to assist and be part of that day. And it was just really awesome to watch how they test therapy dog teams, how they take them through the role plays and the different skills and things that they're going to need to know to be successful. And our evaluator, she was just awesome. She's a big part of what inspired me to get into this role. She was a recreational therapist that worked in the hospital and then also integrated teams into patient care activities. And so her wealth of experience in that area was really impressive. And I thought, I want to be just like her. Right. I want to be somebody who knows the hospital setting, that can help volunteers integrate in the best possible places and grow. So I've always felt that animal-assisted programs could do so much more than they currently do. A lot of the programs are really structured around that initial model of going to visit a patient, sitting in the room for a few minutes and leaving. But some of our teams, and as listening to some presentations from other practitioners in the field, you know, we heard about animal-assisted support teams that were partnering with clinicians and being involved in treatment activities. And so I was always really passionate about how can we innovate and do more, but also how do we do it in a way that's fair and enjoyable to the animal that's participating as well.
Which is so important, because you don't want to put a dog into a situation where they're not comfortable. And I know that that's something that you have a lot of strong feelings about. Tell me a little bit about Dr. Fine.
Yes. About a couple years into that first job, actually right before I left that job to go to another role in pediatrics, I got a blind invite to a conference in, I think it was around Cincinnati, Ohio. Yeah. It was the Animals for Life conference in 2014. And so I asked my supervisor and she said, well, it makes sense as part of your role. So go ahead and go. And so here I am all by myself. I didn't know anybody in the field, sitting at this conference, listening to people talk about these amazing innovations of partnering with animals and how do we protect animal welfare. And so I didn't know at the time that Dr. Aubrey Fine, who is considered like the grandmaster of animal-assisted interventions, he was presenting. And so he gets up and he tells this amazing story about his work as a pediatric psychologist. And so he's sharing this story about how he trained a parrot to participate in interventions with his clients. And so the one that really stood out to me, that really inspired me to this day, he's telling the story about how he trained this parrot to help his clients engage with him. And so how he did that was so he's a pediatric psychologist. So he has kids that are coming to him for treatment. Right. And when kids are coming for treatment, typically it's because the school or a parent referred them. They usually don't want to be there. So it's really difficult to create that kind of therapeutic relationship with someone who really doesn't want to be in therapy. So he utilized kind of the natural social lubricant effect of animals by partnering with this parrot. So the parrot was trained whenever he got notification that a client was seated in the waiting area, that it would go out to the waiting room. And he was telling the story about, you know, the little 2 feet walking across the floor. The parrot would go out to the waiting room and say, the doctor will see you now. And so, of course, what is your natural reaction when you hear that, right? You like perk up. You're like, what is this really happening? Can you imagine a kid seeing a parrot calling them back to see their doctor? Like, I want to meet that guy that trained that bird, and I want him tell me everything about that bird.
Right.
If I was his patient. And so that kind of social effect. And so the parrot would lead them back and they'd meet Dr. Fine, and he would talk about, you know, he'd introduce himself and say, you know, I'm so glad you're here. This is my, I don't remember the parrot's name. I'm so sorry, Dr. Fine. But he would just tell the story about, you know, this is my parrot and, you know, this is what he does with me. You know, we're partners. And so they would kind of start the conversation off in a totally safe, neutral way where they can start to build rapport and relationship. And I thought, oh my God, that is amazing. How many of us go to doctor's appointments where we sit in a uncomfortable lobby that's busy or crowded, or, you know, people are shouting or just talking loudly. You have these overhead, you know, there's a lot of stimulus in hospitals and healthcare that can be really difficult. And so imagine if you had an environment like that, where something new and novel and exciting and something that was really engaging interacted with you and invited you in. Like, how amazing would that be if we can partner with our animal friends, our animal companions, to create those kinds of experiences where everybody is enjoying the interaction? To me, that's magical. And that's what I love about this work.
I agree. That does sound magical. I can just see the faces of those children like, wow.
Tell me
as
more.
A parent, I would have been blown away. And I absolutely love the term social lubricant effect. I've never heard that. But it fits. it fits perfectly. You think of that child's emotional, psychological, just the way they're feeling going in there. Like, is there something wrong with me? Why do I have to be here? I don't want to talk to them. And because you never want children to feel like there's something. But what a way to take all of the sting away from having to go in there. And you're not mindlessly watching television that's on the wall that you cannot see. That I would take a parrot any day. What a wonderful story. I want to see Dr. Fine in action. So, you know, as you're talking about those interactions with those children, go ahead and identify some more of the benefits of that human-animal interaction. Tell us about the science behind it, the underlying need. You know, I think, as we were just saying, we all see the wonders of it, how a pet can be so pivotal in our life, but it's so much more. Like, you know, you were talking about the bond earlier that blew your mind away when you had that first position. And I think about me, you know, I have a bond with my dog, but not that type of bond, that level. So tell us about these benefits. It just sounds so incredible.
It is really incredible to see how animals can help us navigate the day-to-day life. And I think we're starting to really appreciate all the different aspects of life that animals really are involved in. And I mean, they're on TV, they're everywhere out and about in our world. They're sometimes in our homes, or they're out in public. So they play a really important and pivotal role. So the research now is trying to capture what exactly is that benefit. So there's some really promising studies that have come out to show a lot of different types of benefits. A lot of it is anecdotal, people sharing that animals are important to them, that animals are part of their family, they're family members, not just a pet anymore.
Right.
And so in addition to all of those kind of anecdotal, we're starting to see a lot of push for more specific measures of animal-assisted interventions, not just the anecdotal, but also what are the quantitative benefits? How do we measure these kinds of things? So we're looking at not just affiliative behaviors and social connections like we talked about before, but how are we looking at, how do we measure safety? So we're looking at things like mood, motivation, and general outlook kinds of surveys and questionnaires and instruments to measure these types of effects. So we're seeing an overall increase in protective effects and factors for those types of services like the mood, motivation, environmental safety. But we're also seeing things like increased physical activity. We can measure, you know, if people who live with an animal will exercise on average longer than a person who does not have a pet. So sometimes people that don't have pets don't really get out much, but a person with a pet will get out at least 20 to 30 minutes a day because they have to walk their animal. They want that physical activity. Some people will only do it for the pet, not for themselves.
Right. Well, and it also gives them someone else to care for. I think of my mom, who's 89, and I'm struggling with my siblings right now because I want to do something like that for her, give her purpose, get her up, get her taking care of something else so that, you know, my dad's not been gone long and she took care of him. And now it's like everybody's taking care of her. And she was self-sufficient before. We've not helped, I guess is what I'm saying. And I truly believe exactly what you're saying.
I wouldn't say that at all about you. I'm sure that your presence has helped, you know, just the fact that you care and that you're being involved and that you're thinking about these things. And just that presence is so, so important. And that's what animals do for us too. You know, human or animal presence, the people or beings that are important to us, having them in our lives is such an amazingly protective effect. And it also reduces a lot of risk factors like social isolation and loneliness. You know, she knows that people and animals care about her, care about her well-being, and that's so, so important. And all of that eventually rolls up into just improved quality of life, a life worth living that people enjoy and look forward to. That's so important.
100%. And then, you know, you also talk about stress and anxiety. I think of my mom with a cat sitting on her lap, and she's maybe crying about my dad or something, but she's petting this cat as it purrs. And then, you know, that just really calms her mood and helps her relax.
Yes. Some people feel safe with animals in a way they sometimes don't with humans. So it gives them a moment to just stop and catch their breath. And just interacting with an animal is its own form of mindfulness. If you think about it, you're sitting there thinking about how soft their fur feels. You're sitting there listening to, like you said, the purring noise.
Right.
You're getting a lot of sensory stimulation, but not too much, just enough to kind of bring you back to the present moment.
Mm-hmm. In fact, there are nursing homes that actually have stuffed cats that purr, that yes. they'll put on people's laps. And hey, if it works, if it's helpful, you know, that's just such an interesting way to help that person relax when they're so agitated. So yeah. Describe for us the impact of human-animal interaction at, you know, for your patients and your providers at the Mayo Clinic. I'm sure you have a ton of stories, and we honestly could sit here for 10 hours, I am sure. But it's such an interesting topic.
Yeah. So I was really blown away coming to Mayo Clinic. I moved here from out of state, so this is kind of a new experience for me, and I'm kind of learning the culture of Mayo as an outsider coming in. And I was so impressed and so blown away with the just enthusiasm and exuberant love that Mayo Clinic employees have for the caring canines and all of our therapy animals. And I get calls all the time of, you know, we have somebody who is really struggling with a stressful event, or I have a patient who could really benefit from this. So what I see a lot in all the calls that I get, in the emails, in all the requests, is this kind of ultimate purpose, sense of purpose, that we are all working together, and it kind of gives them a sense of, you know, the needs of the patient come first, and this is something that could reach my patient when nothing else can. So there's that sense of unified purpose between our volunteers and our employees. But I think it's also, we see a sense of safety, connection, and what I really enjoy most is seeing that sense of agency. We've seen the incorporation of therapy animals into treatment activities help patients kind of take their power back when they come into a healthcare facility, especially someplace like Mayo, where they're coming to us because nobody else could help them typically. They have no answers. For many patients, we're kind of their last stop. Like, if Mayo Clinic can't figure it out, like, nobody can. And so there's kind of this sense of helplessness of, oh my gosh, am I going to make it through? And so when we incorporate and partner with our animal friends and help people ground themselves, give them hope again, or just give them somebody to connect to, we create all these, and we reestablish that sense of safety, even if it's just in the moment. It allows them to kind of think, like, I can do this. And so we've had some examples of situations where clinicians had patients who were struggling with procedures because, you know, when you're really sick or you're injured, sometimes procedures hurt or they're uncomfortable because you have to endure that for a little while in order to get better. And so the presence of the animals has helped patients get through. Sometimes they'll do it for the animal as their motivator, but sometimes the animal just helps them find strength inside themselves, which is just really amazing. And I've heard so many stories about patients who would not do treatments, would then do them for the animal. So for a lot of staff, watching their patients enthusiastically complete procedures is a cup refiller. And it's a sense of, like, I'm doing the right thing. I'm helping my patients. I'm doing everything that I can to meet the needs of my patients.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. So I think some of the other comments you had mentioned to me that patients had said, this made my day, this high will sustain me for the next 6 months. And that has got to really make you and your staff and the nurses and the doctors just feel like they could conquer anything.
Oh, yeah. It's my volunteers will tell me, like, this is why I volunteer, is for comments like that. If I get one of those at the end of my shift, I am satisfied for the day.
Yeah, that's amazing. Something else that you told me when we were talking the other day that I found incredible was that you have Mayo doctors, but you also have Mayo doctors.
Yes.
And I would love to see one of those Mayo doctors. That is so exciting. Tell us a little bit about that. Who thought of that terminology?
Oh, gosh, that was... I can't remember exactly how it happened, but I remember one day I'm working and one of my teams comes in to visit, and I notice there all of our dogs have ID badges like our Mayo Clinic employees do, and they look identical except it has a picture of the dog and it has therapy dog Daisy or therapy dog Lily or whatever the dog's name is. And so one day they come in and there's this little hang tag hanging off of the ID badge and it says doctor. And I just burst out laughing and I said, where in the world did you get that? I'm like, you can't have gotten that from Global Security. And they were like, oh, well, we found it. And they're like, what do you think? And I'm like, well, let's see what happens. As I thought, ooh, it could go either one of two ways. Like somebody could be concerned and feel right. that it's not quite the right messaging, or somebody could just take it for what it really was. It was just a humorous right. kind of distraction conversation starter. And so sure. that's really what it has become. And so then suddenly, you know, two caring canine teams have it, and then four caring canine teams have it. And it was pretty funny. I was pretty amused, but I'll never forget the one day I was with one of my caring canines teams that had the doctor tag mm-hmm. and we're in an elevator and some doctor gets into the elevator with us. And I thought, oh boy, here's the test. Right. And so the doctor, you know, pushes the elevator button. He kind of stands there and all of a sudden he glances over and he looks over at the dog and he sees the tag and you just see the corner of his mouth turn up. And he's like, huh, that's cute. And I was like, whew, all right.
It passed.
Yes. And so then the Lindsay and Rye story came out recently on the Mayo Clinic News Network that was talking about how she and her dog Rye have really helped a patient that had epilepsy. And so the title of that article was Doctor and Doctor Help Patient. And I thought, well, now it's official.
Oh, that is great. That is great. So I believe it is Mags and Molly that it might be Molly or Mags, I'm not sure, that's involved in a clinical stroke study.
Yeah, so we have a couple of volunteers, Susan and Phil, and their two dogs, Mags and Molly. They're both Yorkies, and they're adorable. So they are participating and partnering with our research team to do a stroke rehab animal-assisted treatment study. And so mm-hmm. it's a really neat study where they're looking at information about the outcomes of for patients. How successful are they? How motivated are they to complete their treatment? But they're also, what I really appreciate about this as a dog person, they're also studying the effect on the dog. So one thing that's really been important in this field, a lot of the studies have focused on the welfare of humans strictly. So right. now there's a lot of calls for what we also need to be measuring and evaluating the welfare of the dogs. And so the study is starting to attempt that. So it's a Mayo Clinic rigorous study that's been through mm-hmm. all of the hoops that the studies need to go through in healthcare. But they're also we also have a veterinarian that's a part of that study team, and he's measuring some biophysiological markers. He's studying like cortisol, for example, to look at stress response in the dogs. And he's kind of evaluating that response after the treatment is completed.
That's really interesting. My husband used to train cadaver dogs, and they were always very careful and watchful of the dogs when they were searching amongst the rubble or the rocks or whatever, because if the dog didn't find anybody, the dog would get depressed. So the dog had to have rests, and you couldn't work them for too long mm-hmm. because they would get depressed and they would be sad because they didn't find, you know, a person, which, I mean, that just really, I'm a dog person too. And that just makes me tearful to think that dog, you know, is really trying so hard and would be much like us. We would be very upset if we couldn't find somebody. So, it's just amazing. So you're talking a lot about dogs. So are there other animals that you typically are involved with your program or that do a lot of animal-assisted services work?
So in most healthcare organizations in the United States, I feel pretty confident saying that the majority of programs are strictly focused on dogs. Mm-hmm. And Mayo Clinic was that way for a long time. This year, we have explored adding a miniature horse to our roster. So you may have seen some of the stories because he became kind of a media frenzy. His name is Munchkin, and he's a miniature horse that has dwarfism. So he actually, in addition to being a miniature horse, he's a little bit, I like to tell people he's a little bit smaller than small. But he also has a deformity in his spine and his legs and some things. So we have to make a lot of accommodations so that he can enjoy his visits. But we've really seen him start to approach people and really seek out engagements and interactions. So that's been a real joy to watch. So he's our second miniature horse at Mayo Clinic any of our Mayo Clinic sites. The first was Baron. He's a miniature horse that does not have dwarfism. He's a full, healthy mini. And so he visits at Mayo Clinic Hospice, which is another service that Mayo Clinic offers. And he goes to patients' homes or he goes to assisted living, wherever he's approved to go. He works very closely with Mayo Clinic Hospice coordinators. Hospice is outside of my scope, but I talk to my partner over there all the time. And they have some really awesome visits with their residents and patients as well.
I bet the families as well, when you think about, well, any department in the hospital. Everybody's frightened. Everybody's uncertain, anxious about what's going to happen. And so then you also talked about before, Pet Partners registers 9 species of animals.
So Pet Partners is a national nonprofit organization that registers and provides training for therapy animal handler teams. Mm-hmm. I am a member of Pet Partners myself. I was an animal handler. Unfortunately, my current dog is not a registered team. After we moved to Rochester, she just decided that other dogs were not for her, so we can't get through the neutral dog exercise. So I'm like, maybe it's time to give her a little break. You know, the pandemic was pretty rough because we passed our test right before the pandemic, and then we got a couple of visits in, and then that ended pretty quickly. But anyway, so I'm also a team evaluator. So that means that I am somebody who will host evaluation events. I will run potential teams through a series of exercises where I measure their skills and aptitude, and then I give them feedback to help them in their therapy animal handler journey. So if they're not ready that day, I might give them some ideas of places they can look for dog training or places that are dog friendly in the city area, or just, you know, invite them to come back and test again. And I give them their score sheet so they know what to work on if they want to consult a dog trainer. And if they pass, then I guide them through the registration process. I help them find facilities that might be a good fit for them and their dog. I provide support for teams. So that's really been beneficial for my role as an animal assisted services coordinator, because I've gotten to see so many different dog personalities and individuals. And I've really gotten to appreciate how they all have different needs and strengths and weaknesses. So it's really important to match those up well.
Yeah, that's neat. So the 9 species that they register are what? Dogs, cats, horses, rabbits, guinea pigs, rats. I don't know if I'd want a rat. Bird, miniature pigs. I've heard pigs are just wonderful little animals. Llamas and alpacas. That's just so exciting. Have you registered? Had you have any other animals that you've been able to register?
So as an evaluator, I've mostly worked with dogs. I've probably done less than 10 mini horses. I think I've seen 3 rabbits. And during my instructor or my evaluator workshop training, I witnessed the evaluation of a cat, but he didn't get past exercise 2. But I do have a colleague at another hospital who does have a therapy cat that's in her program that's adorable, and he just loves it. So it can be done. It's just very rare.
Is there anything else you wanted to share with us about the registered therapy and animal handler team that maybe you didn't hit on before? There's that new organization, the Association of Animal Assisted Interventions Professionals.
Yeah, so that's a really good, that's a new area in this field that's still kind of growing and developing. So a lot of this work in animal assisted services got started because of volunteers who trained their own personal pets, met all these criteria, took all these tests. But what we're finding over time is that there are certain professional fields where volunteers may not be the best fit. For example, like a mental health counselor who's working with patients with extreme sensitivities. Maybe they were traumatized, or they were involved as a victim of a crime, or they just have really sensitive information they're not comfortable sharing in front of a volunteer. And so there were professionals who were identifying that I have a potential therapy animal that could come to work with me and could really be a benefit to my clients. How do I do this? But there, for the longest time, for years and years, there was never any kind of approving body that had any kind of education or certification or any information. So Pet Partners got that feedback for quite a few years of, you know, this is great service that you have for volunteers. You know, we wish you had something for professionals. And so in the last couple of years, I think 2-3 years ago, they launched their sister organization the Association of Animal Assisted Intervention Professionals, mm-hmm. Or sometimes we also call it AAAIP. Mm-hmm. So they're literally like a sister organization of Pet Partners, except their focus is professionals who want to involve therapy animals in their professional roles. And so they educate professionals on the different ways to partner with therapy animals, and they break it down kind of into two models. So there's the diamond model, where you do partner with a volunteer. And the volunteer is essentially that person who is responsible for the animal's welfare, while the clinician can focus on the patient. Right. So that's a lot of what we do in healthcare is diamond model, because we have such mm-hmm. complex environments that right. that's the best model to protect the welfare of the animal. However, there are some environments where that model may not be a good fit, like I talked about before. So that would kind of fall into the triangle model, where there's mm-hmm. a clinician, a therapy animal, and a patient or a client. And so in those circumstances, they need some extra training and support because their animals may be working longer days. Right. They may be exposed to stimuli that volunteer handler dogs may not be. And so there are unique risk factors that have to be considered and evaluated. So it's difficult because there's so many different disciplines now that incorporate animals into practice. There's physical therapy, there's nursing, there's mm-hmm. mental health counselors. Heck, I've even heard of some other volunteer coordinators in other healthcare organizations who are partnering with facility dogs to go and visit with patients or to partner with clinicians to be that dog handler. So it's important to have resources available. So AAAIP offers online classes that are geared towards professionals who incorporate animals into their work. They also offer the certification that I carry, Certified Animal Assisted Intervention Specialist, and it mm-hmm. covers several domains that are important to incorporating animals into your work and protecting their welfare. Looking, for example, we also have to consider zoonotic disease transmission risk, especially mm-hmm. in organizations like healthcare. Zoonotic yeah. disease refers to diseases that can transfer between humans mm-hmm. and animals. So how do we prevent those things? We have strategies to do that. How do we protect animal welfare? So they have courses on that. The certification covers all of those domains so right. that you can guarantee that you have that knowledge. But it also requires continuing education. So it takes into account that you need to keep up on that knowledge and education that every right. you know, we're learning new things every day. So they're a great resource for that. But they also, what made them unique is that they offer liability insurance coverage for professionals that is unique for them. Because originally before, providers would have to try to work through their own clinical practice insurance, or they would have right. to hope their organization might be willing to cover them. And some weren't. For example, schools. Many schools were not able to offer additional supplemental insurance mm-hmm. To cover these teams. So AAAIP kind of filled that gap in providing insurance coverage for professionals.
That's great, because it is such a unique role. But we yeah. are a long way from pet therapy, of seeing the dog come through the door and smile and everybody pets the dog. I mean, you have really taken this to another level completely. So tell us some examples of animal assisted activities.
Sure. So essentially, that term animal assisted kind of implies that there's some kind of structure, motivation, goal involved. So animal assisted activities, or as it's going to probably soon be called, animal assisted support, generally mm-hmm. refers to kind of unstructured activities, motivational goals. So some of those are just your friendly average visit that you typically would see in a hospital setting. But if there's animal-assisted treatment, or formerly animal-assisted therapy, typically that's goal-directed, clinician-guided, a licensed clinician-guided. So that would be something like a physical therapist intentionally involving an animal in a motor function exercise. So, for example, mm-hmm. they might have the patient throw a ball mm-hmm. for the dog, and then the dog retrieves it, brings it back, and they might then have the patient bend over, take the ball, pick it back up and throw it. So, you know, it looks like you're just playing a game of fetch, but right. they're actually working out different arm muscles. Right. But they're incorporating the animal as a modality to motivate the patient to complete the activity and to work out that specific muscle group. So it's clinician guided because they know exactly what muscle groups they're working on. A typical animal handler may not have that kind of licensed clinician background unless they are the professional that is partnering with their own animal. Mm-hmm. They're intentionally doing it to meet a patient care goal as part of their treatment. Reading programs also can be considered either animal-assisted activities if it's just general motivation. But if there's a teacher involved, animal-assisted education, that teacher might be measuring the amount of words that that student recognizes or how fast that student can read. That would kind of turn it into the realm of animal-assisted treatment, where you have, or animal-assisted education, where you have that licensed provider, that licensed educator, coming up with treatment goals for that student or reading goals for that student, and incorporating the animal intentionally into meeting those goals.
That's incredible. I can see, you know, if my arm was hurting and I didn't want to move it, and I wouldn't move it for the physical therapist, I would probably move it to throw a ball for a dog. No doubt. What is the honeybee game?
So this was actually something I discovered at my previous hospital. So I was working in a peds hospital before, and during the pandemic, we developed virtual animal visits as an intervention so that we could continue to keep the human-animal bond going in a way that was safe for our patients as we were navigating the unknown. Also, I did it because I was really desperate to see dogs, and I didn't want to make 100,000 COVID kits a day. I needed a break. Luckily, you know, we, being in a peds environment and being in an environment like Mayo, you have a lot of innovators and a lot of people around you that want to try new things. And so when I went to the IT department and I explained what I was looking for, they were like, okay, why not? We'll give it a shot. So they got me an iPad. They set me up with hospital approved technology. I think at the time we used Microsoft Teams because it was the only one that was met their security. And then it was the volunteers, honestly, that gave me the idea. They were like, hey, Whitney, there's this other hospital that's doing it. We really desperately want to help our patients. Like, can we do this? So I'm like, I'll give it a shot. Got the iPad, recruited the volunteers, told them what we were doing, got them signed up for training. And I probably had a quarter of our roster sign up right away. And then as other volunteers heard about it doing really well, some others signed up as well. They were like, oh, patients are actually taking really well to this. I want to get involved too. One of my volunteers, her name is Stacy, and she'll probably smile if she hears this, has a dog named Bishop, and he is a release dog from Canine Companions. And so what that meant was that he was trained to be a service dog, but for whatever reason, they determined that service animal work was not a good fit for him. In my opinion, my unprofessional opinion, it was because he was too friendly, because he was kind of a goofball and he loved to socialize with people and he was very wiggly. So I'm going to guess that maybe he couldn't focus on his task enough because he was too social.
Not serious enough.
And he was a wonderful therapy dog. And so because of his task training, she was able to adapt some games and kind of have him play the role of the child. So she was pretending to kind of, through the dog, play games with the child over the screen. And so the honeybee game is kind of like one of those, it's a board game where you have this tree set up and you have the sticks put through the slats and you put some marbles in the top. And so she would tell the patient, you know, we're going to play the honeybee game together. Bishop's going to take your turn for you. And then we'll play this game together. And so she would pull out a stick and then she would say, Bishop, get. And Bishop would put his mouth around the stick, pull it out, and she would say, Bishop, drop. And so he would drop the stick. And they would play the game together like that until the marbles fell out. And then at the end, whenever the marbles fell out, Bishop got lots of treats. So he loved the game. He was always very excited because our volunteers just know how to motivate their dogs. And the patient was just cracking up laughing because they would love watching Bishop try to get the stick in his mouth. They would love watching him spit it out, doing all of his cues. And they would also love the end when he had a big party and he got his treats. And they just, you know, no matter what the outcome of the game was, they just had a good time together. So it was really cool to watch.
The innovation post-COVID is really transforming healthcare. The ability to utilize pet services virtually is just bringing such value to those patients. And it's beyond important.
We've actually continued it here at Mayo Clinic. When I started in my role here, during my interview, I had talked about the virtual visit program and my supervisor said, do you think you could do it here at Mayo? And I was like, well, yeah, I just need an iPad. So literally she just plops one in my hand and I was like, oh, you want to start this like tomorrow?
That's right.
And so, you know, we talked to some stakeholders. And so she actually got me in touch with a nursing council that was trying to come up with some interventions for, they had a group of at-risk patients that were needing some additional activities to stimulate them and help them socially connect. And so I mentioned the virtual animal visits and they were like, oh my gosh, this would be great. There were several of them that had patients that were in isolation or patients that had other restrictions where a live animal visit would be contraindicated, meaning that it wouldn't be safe for either the animal or the child. And so they thought the virtual would be a really good alternative. And so I partnered with Child Life and I partnered with nursing, and we came up with some potential units for me to visit. And so I took the iPad around. I got a couple of volunteers, and Susan is one of those volunteers that you were talking about before, who very enthusiastic champion and adopter of the idea. So she was actually one of my first volunteers that was doing it. I think I only had two that signed up. I had Susan and Phil, Mags and Molly, and I had Jane and Cole and Benny Burrito sign up to do virtual visits. And so it was a raging success. I was shocked because I thought post-pandemic, the kids are going to look at me like I'm crazy. Like, no, I don't ever want to see an iPad ever again. But I would walk in the door, knock, knock, I'm Whitney. I have virtual animal visits. And at first they were kind of like, what? And I said, it's like a FaceTime call. Right, with our therapy dogs. And they just, you just watch their face light up. They were like, yeah, bring it over. Right. And they just enthusiastically connected with these teams. And I have to give all their credit to the volunteers because they are just masters of befriending almost anybody. as soon as the screen came on, they were like, hi, my name's Susan. I'm so excited to meet you today.
Right. Just the ability to bring somebody into that room for stress reduction, mood enhancement, social interaction, especially if you're in isolation, especially of child. Yeah. But that is amazing. And having spoken with Susan, I can just see her beaming through the television to that child or the iPad or whatever, display that you utilized for that patient. That's just absolutely amazing. We are running out of time, but what safety measures are in place to ensure the well-being of both the animals and the people interacting with them?
That's a great question. And it's kind of the crux and the importance of a role like my own in a healthcare organization. And so a really good resource that a lot of healthcare organizations already use is the Society for Healthcare Epidemiology Association guidelines for animals in healthcare institutions. Some people know them as the SHEA guidelines. It's a really good starting point for just, oh my gosh, I'm trying to write a policy. I'm trying to start a program. Where do I start? If you're in healthcare, start there, because they really just do a great job of outlining the groundwork, like the base minimum requirements you have to have in a program. So a lot of other programs, in addition to the SHEA guidelines, will include components of requiring an annual veterinary exam, and sometimes twice a year, depending on the animal's exposure level or age, but generally at least annual, and keeping them up to date on required vaccinations. And vets will keep an eye on any disease surveillance going on in their communities to make sure the animals are protected. We usually recommend that animals are bathed within 24 hours of a visit. However, usually accommodations are made because if you bathe a therapy animal visits three times a week. You cannot bathe the dog three times a week because you're going to irritate the skin. They're going to shed more. They're going to potentially have hot spots. You're essentially putting them at risk of more disease or injury. So I always tell my teams, you know, talk to your veterinarian if you're visiting multiple times a week, because really for the health of the animal, generally it's not recommended to bathe an animal more than once a month. Maybe twice a month if they're visibly soiled or something, but it really should be kept to a minimum. And then every dog's coat type and skin type is different. So I always tell my teams, talk to your vet, find out what grooming and bathing and keeping your animal clean will look like for them. Sometimes there are chlorhexidine or like animal safe sanitizer wipes. Sometimes there's a dry shampoo that can do the effect too. Right. But just making sure the animals are clean. And the most important, the one we always preach in healthcare, is hand hygiene. You know, washing your hands before and after petting animals eliminates a large majority of the risk of zoonotic disease transmission, as well as keeping both humans and animals safe. Just like the humans, we have animals call off when they're sick or injured, or even if there's a sudden weird behavior change. I once had a situation where there was a dog that air snapped at a staff member, and he'd been in our program for 12 years, and it was really unusual. He had never done that before, ever. And the handler took him to the vet, and they found out that he has slipped disc in his back, and it was causing him pain. So they got him treatment, they got him pain meds, they got him doggy chiropractic. It's amazing. And totally different dog. He went right back to the bubbly, bouncy pup that we're used to. So if you see weird behaviors in your dog, like they're suddenly avoiding things or they're suddenly shy, talk to your vet, eliminate health risks first. And then
you are keeping a very close eye on these dogs, and are their handlers.
Yes. So handlers are educated and empowered to advocate for their animal. Part of that is studying their body language. Part of that is redirecting people when they get a little too handsy or a little too excited. You know, sometimes people will rush your dog. So it's about being comfortable saying, I'm so glad you're excited to see my dog. Can I have you have a seat over here and I'll bring him up to you? And then, of course, my role, I think, is really important, not necessarily me personally, but having a person within an institution, especially one that is human health centered, whose primary objective, I always tell my volunteers, the rest of Mayo Clinic, the needs of the patient comes first. But me, my role here, the needs of your dogs come first, because your dogs can't speak English. They, you know, they need you and I to advocate for them. So while the volunteers are the experts in their own animals and they advocate for their own individual animals, I'm the person who is looking at that global picture and saying, how do we structure our program overall to make sure that it's friendly for animals in general? So I'm advocating for the handlers and their animals on an institutional level. I'm consulting on policies and procedures that are going to affect them and what they do here at Mayo Clinic. I'm making sure we align with best practices. I'm bringing information into the organization to educate handlers and clinicians, telling them, you know, please don't do this to volunteers. You know, please give these benefits to volunteers, or please, you know, make these arrangements so that volunteers feel comfortable and safe, or their dogs feel comfortable and safe. Please don't ask them to do these types of things. So lots of education, cultivating structures that promote positive animal welfare. One example that I received was when I was in a previous hospital, I was asked, you know, Whitney, it's really important that therapy animals only visit patients, because that's the focus of this program. And I pushed back on that. And I said, no, I don't think that's something that we should be pushing for, because the animals benefit from friendships with the humans as much as the humans benefit from them. And so if we take that away, so I've seen in so many hospitals across my career, dogs eventually develop friendships with the humans that are in the hospitals. And sometimes, you know, they have that, like, it's like seeing your best friend at work. And so if we take that away from the dogs, that stable person who's not sick, who's not a stranger, somebody they know they can rely on, that's a guaranteed safe space. If we take that away, I think it harms the animal's welfare. So I feel like any relationships that those animals develop need to be cultivated and supported, as long as everybody's safe in the interaction. But I that's why I said, I fully support our therapy animals visiting staff as much as patients, because everybody benefits from that, including the animal. So that's really important piece there. So then handler education, competence, and patient safety, all of those things come together. And so that's kind of the focus of what I do, is I'm the person that ties it all together and makes sure that the animals are a part of that conversation.
Wow, that's amazing. And I have to tell you, as a nurse of over 35 years, when I worked in the emergency room in the ICU, when we saw the animals come on to the unit, it just really, it lifted my day, it lifted all of our days. So one, it made you feel good, but two, you know that the benefits that your patients were going to receive. So how do the staff express interest? How do they arrange a pet visit?
So one thing I really like about Mayo, they are really great at utilizing their technology to streamline processes and make things easier. And so it was kind of unique to me, but they actually can put in orders in Epic for animal assisted. I'm going to call it support here. I did put in a name change request. They used to call it animal assisted therapy. So they started thinking that I was this therapist that had a dog at my desk and I would just go deploy. So we're doing a name change, animal assisted support. So they understand that these are volunteers that are providing visits, but so they can put in an order, animal assisted support in Epic. And that list comes to me, and there's a big master list, and it puts all of the patient's information together in one place. And so then I can communicate that back out to our volunteers through the volunteer portal. There's an electronic portal where I can essentially post the request list. It's just room numbers, so there's no PHI, but the volunteers know where the requests are. But the nice thing about this Epic list is it updates in real time. So I'm not sending a volunteer to room 123. If they don't show up on Epic, or if the patient gets discharged, they come off the list automatically. So I don't have to wait for a unit to call me to say, oh, the patient was discharged, or a volunteer to go up to the unit, find out the patient was discharged, come back and tell me, and then take them off the list. I get all these updates in real time, which is just awesome. Sometimes they will call me if there's a special circumstance, if the patient is perhaps actively dying, and the family member would really benefit in the moment. So I can check and see if there's a team here, or if there's a special circumstance and they're not sure if it's safe for a dog, I always invite them to call me and we talk it through. But generally, that's the process here, is they just put in an order.
That's great. I have in the past, in patient engagement technology, set up like a library of the animal volunteers, so that patients could get on their smart TV and choose which animal that they would like to have visit them. So I have done that in the past, and that was a lot of fun. And the animals' pictures came up. And again, that was integrated with the EMR. So Cool. If the patient was discharged, you know, that they would go off the list. Never did virtual. However, we do offer virtual, you know, on the in-room television set. So what an amazing you know, process that you have created. People, processes, animals, and technology. 100%. Yeah. So as we're kind of coming to a close, oh my goodness. You know, at Mayo, how do you choose your teams? How do you choose who comes and is a volunteer with their animal partner? How do you choose who gets to be part of animal assisted services at Mayo?
That's a hard choice.
I bet.
We're always very careful to kind of look at, you know, my ultimate criteria is, does the animal want to do this? You know, that's the mm-hmm. first question I always ask. And I love, one of my favorite dog trainers always asks the question, how is this for you, Suzanne Clothier? And so I kind of always have that in my head when I'm meeting a team for the first time. I look at the animal and I think, how is this for you? Are you enjoying right. yourself or are you miserable?
Right.
And it doesn't have anything to do with the dog's skills or aptitude or goodness or badness. I always, you know, it's like when you sign kids up for after school activities. Some kids want to do ballet and some kids want to do karate. Mm-hmm. And same thing goes for animals. Some of them love socializing and meeting strangers and cuddling up. And some of them would rather do agility. They're like, no, I want to move my body. I want to be active. I don't want to sit here and socialize. So those are the things. That's the primary thing I look for first. So as far as onboarding volunteers as a program and as a process, we do ask that they get registered with a hospital-approved therapy animal organization first. And that ensures that they get a baseline education about how therapy animal handling and volunteering works. They get education about reading dog body language, about advocating for their therapy animals. They're getting evaluated by someone. They're going through a standardized evaluation process and getting registered for that liability insurance coverage protection. So once they're through that hospital-approved therapy dog organization, they turn in that paperwork to me. They usually get some kind of either acceptance letter or an ID badge that says that they're a member. And then I have them give me a copy of their vet forms so that I can make mm-hmm. sure they're up to date on vaccines and that they're generally physically healthy. And then I bring them through the volunteer onboarding process. So it looks very similar to many organizations. We have an application. We have an interview process where I talk to the handler first without the dog. And I kind of talk to them about, tell me about your dog. What's your dog's personality like? And I ask them a few questions about, you know, what kind of people does your dog seek out? What kind of activities do you notice where your dog's eyes light up? What are your dog's stress signals? How do they tell you when they're done? What's their limit? And so I kind of see where they're at, if they can tell me that. If they can't, then I know that's something I need to work on with training them. So depending on what they tell me, unless they tell me like, oh, my dog's afraid of men or children, you know, then I maybe suggest to them, maybe your dog might not be ready for this yet. Maybe you want to start somewhere less stressful than a hospital.
Right.
But, you know, generally they come to me, they kind of get the idea that their dog needs to be really enjoying this kind of work and generally pretty adaptable. So I'll bring them through the process. Typically, I start with an orientation where I meet them and their dog, and I just walk them around the public areas of Mayo. And I just get, it's a baseline evaluation. We don't visit people intentionally. Now, like if somebody stops us in the hallway, if the dog is seeking out and approaching, I'll encourage the handler, like, yeah, go ahead and let them visit and let's watch. Mm-hmm. And if you notice that your dog's getting stressful, if you see anything, we can just get them right out of here. So we kind of keep it very minimal and just make sure the dog's comfortable in the environment in general. If the dog does pretty okay, and most of them do, then I'll get them paired up with some of our experienced caring canine volunteers. They'll shadow. They don't have their dog with them because it's really hard to think for two people simultaneously and learn new things at the same time.
Right, right.
That way they get used to Mayo Clinic. They know where things are. They kind of start to get to learn the processes. They also have an online self-learning that we've just implemented that they can do at their own pace. They can read information as well. So we have multiple methods of learning available to them. And at the end, I do a supervised visit, as many as that team needs. And I go with them on visits and their dog. I go with them to patient care units and I observe their dog's behavior. I give them coaching and feedback. And I'm noticing XYZ behavior in your dog. Tell me what that means. Does your dog need a break? Let's go for a potty break. Let me show you where that is. So I go through all of that with them until they feel comfortable and ready for independent visiting.
You have created quite the department. I now know why everybody said, you must talk to Whitney. It is just truly amazing the work that you've done and the meaningful connections and bonds between animals and patients and staff that I know that you have been a huge part of, the innovation and the transformation of pet therapy at Mayo through your guidance is just truly amazing. And I thank you for everything that you do. If there's one thing that we didn't get to talk about that you would like to share, one pearl about what you do that you would like to share with us before we sign off, what would that be?
So I would probably have to say the most important value of this work is always centering the animal experience in your role. And sometimes when we run into trouble or when we run into hiccups, it's usually because we forgot to check in with the animal.
Right.
And so I always stress to anybody that's new to this field, anybody that's interested in this field, anybody that's just getting started. I had a nurse actually reached out to me from another hospital saying, oh, I'm involving my therapy animal in my work, and I'm just overwhelmed with all the things that we can do, and where do I get started? And I said, you know what? Stop for a minute. Focus on the relationship. Learn your dog. Center your dog in your experience. Start with that first. That's so, so important, because everything else will flow eventually if you have that strong foundation with your dog. If you're centered with your dog, you're connected with your dog, you're reading their body language, you're responding, you're asking for their consent and you're receiving it. And when they see that, if they tell you they're stressed, you give them a break. If they see that when they are asking to do visits and they're communicating with you and they're getting responses, they're getting their needs met, they're going to enjoy the experience longer, but they're also going to have more meaningful engagements with people. They're going to have, you know, you're going to get that therapeutic effect that everybody is vying for. That's the only way that you can possibly get that therapeutic effect, is if you have a positive relationship where both the needs of the dog and the needs of the patient are being met, or we call that mutual benefit. So that's so, so important.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you for all that you do.
Oh my gosh. You know what? Thank you for all of your kind words, but it really is all about the teamwork here. I'm so grateful for my colleagues who are helping me learn Mayo Clinic every day, that are pointing out resources to me that I didn't even know existed. I always tell people I feel like I moved to Eureka, that town from the sci-fi TV show where, you know, everybody's a PhD and they have all this great innovation and knowledge. But also our volunteers. Our volunteers are so, so incredible. They are so hungry to do more, do better, serve our patients in new and unique ways. I mean, they inspire me every day when they call me with their stories. I cry all the time because they do incredible work. They are really transforming healthcare and creating these experiences that I think it transforms a patient's story. You know, when they go home and they get to talk about, I had to go to Mayo Clinic because nobody else could cure me. They get to come home and they get to say, I met a dog.
Right.
You know, like and they can talk about the dog's trading card, and they can talk about all the dog's characteristics and traits, and it transforms the narrative, and that's powerful. Being able to have that kind of narrative that you can share, it's empowering. You don't feel bad about yourself, but you also feel like a natural connection to people because they all want to ask, oh, what kind of dog? You know, it starts dialogue. There's so many benefits that just, it's like a ripple effect, and it's amazing. So I really can't take all the credit. I have to give a shout out to my team here in volunteer services, even the gift shop. Amazing, amazing teamwork. So even places that you would not think would work together here at Mayo or in any healthcare institution, you know, there's so much teamwork and camaraderie and everybody pitching in to come up with newer and better things. And it's really true. The more diverse mindsets and people and ideas you have, the greater you can make a service, or the greater the outcome that you can achieve.
I agree 100%. And I will add that we are having Susan and Phil on the podcast with Mags and Molly. And I said, I must have a picture of Mags and Molly. She goes, you know what? Nobody ever wants to see Phil and I anymore. They only want pictures of Mags and Molly. And I'm like, well, we'll take a picture of you guys too.
I'll never forget when I got hired at my last hospital. I actually started there as a volunteer first, and then I got hired a couple years later. And I'll never forget, I went to HR orientation. We're sitting in an auditorium and there's, you know, probably 20 or 30 of us. All of a sudden somebody stands up and they point at me and they're like, oh my God, you're Mocha's mom. That was my second therapy partner. I was like, what? Oh, hi. You know, like they recognized me from volunteering because of my dog. And it's so true what the volunteers go through. And I experienced that personally. So it just made me laugh. And then a couple months later, an employee walks in from another department and she says, "Oh my God, I remember your first therapy dog, Roxy." And I was like, "Oh my God." You know, Roxy had passed away. Yeah, she was my heart dog that was like a born therapy dog. And I'm very careful when I use that term, but really, like, she just totally enthusiastically consented every time. Like, she literally ran downstairs, woke me up out of bed, and dragged me to my car every Saturday at 10 a.m. because she loved volunteering. Like, she came and got me. It wasn't me going to get her. So,
right.
And so it was so touching for that employee to come back and be like, "Oh my God, Roxy was such a great dog." I think that's what our volunteers enjoy the most, is those connections and those moments of like, your dog made a difference for me. Your dog made mm-hmm. a connection. Your dog helped me through one of the worst times of my life. And that's kind of that moment that I had. So mm-hmm. I can appreciate where the volunteers come from when they tell me those stories. And, you know, I love to make more of those experiences happen for them. I love to help facilitate those kind of connections for them here with other staff and patients.
Well, I think that is something about healthcare. Most people get into it not from what they get out of it, but yeah. it's what they can give. But then at the same time, as you give, you are just so filled.
That's the truth. That's really, I think that's the perfect way to summarize it, because you don't expect the experiences that come upon you, but man, like when you go home at night, that's what refills your cup. That's what makes you feel like, yeah, this is what it's all about.
Right. And it's the little things. It's not the big things, you know, it's yeah. holding someone's hand. It's just being able to be there in that moment and provide them care, warmth, comfort. That's so very important.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Whitney, thank you so much. And thank you for your team. 100%.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure to be here and talk about my passion and my love.
All right. Well, everyone that's listening, keep an eye out for Whitney's podcast and Mags and Molly soon to follow. So thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to PX Space. For more information, head to our website at journeypx.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our monthly newsletter.